providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Dana Lyons. We are now shifting our focus more to the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy newsletter. That is a free report where Joseph covers more the supply and demand, the fundamentals and the data around the energy sector. Now, Joseph, just as a quick recap, boy, oh boy, it was quite the year to start off for the energy sector with oil, nat gas, those running pretty much through the first 6 months. And then oil did a bit of a turnaround here. It reached a high of over 120 and has now corrected down to a little under the $80 level. It has rebounded off that $70 level early in December. Joseph, just as a recap of this year, do you take away a positive stance from this up and down move, or is it more negative as we end this year for energy?
Well, as you may know, and as we've discussed in our prior monthly chats, I've been negative for the last 6 months or more, and I'm getting more and more optimistic that we're going to have one more decline phase into Q1. And that would set up a price of under $70 for WTI, down from the $130 that we saw at the high right after the Russia invasion of Ukraine. And stocks, many of them are down 50% or more in the E&P and service sector, and many of the stocks in the pipeline and infrastructure area are down 20% or more. So we're getting close to bargain territory. I thought last week when we were having those down days that we were close to sending out a buy signal and recommending a number of stocks which we would add to our action alert buy list, which right now only has 8 names, and we were hoping to get it up to 20 names during this buy signal phase that we expect as it unfolds in the coming weeks. And I still believe that'll be the case. So we rebounded a little bit today. Down yesterday was a nasty day, and we're getting close again. When we get that those indicators kick in with the buy signal, we'll be sending out multiple action alert buy lists and get up to that 20 in the coming week. So I'm in the camp that we're probably going to see one more wee period of weakness. Part of it could be economic data from China, and part of it could be economic decline data from China. And then other parts could be related to Q4 earnings results, where companies talk about, the weak quarter and the guidance is somewhat negative. And then we'll see where we go from there.
Well, Joseph, if people think about the bigger picture in energy, for the last two decades, it has underperformed a lot of other sectors. So really in 2022, having this big breakout that it did was the first time a lot of investors, as far as generalists, started considering what is their allocation to the energy space and oil and net gas stocks and what kind of exposure should they have in their portfolio. From that sense, do you think it was a constructive year for the energy space? Because I know longer term, you still expect this to have some legs, even though there's maybe some short-term weakness. How do you see the year of 22 playing into the general theme of investors having exposure to this sector?
Well, I think that, with the underinvestment by companies because of the cloudy issues where, Biden is not being supportive of the industry. Of course, in Canada, Trudeau is heading to hydrogen and renewables. And so there's not a lot of support for new projects. LNG, on the West Coast is probably viable, and we have LNG Canada under construction, and phase two is likely. Other projects are moving forward with support from Pembina Pipelines and Enbridge. So I think we're going to see LNG on the West Coast. So natural gas to me is one of the ones I think is going to be a winner. But the oil side still has the ESG, problem, and also, carbon taxes and carbon sequestration. And again, the guidance from the governments are still, not clear. And so I think that the overall industry is going to be doing well worldwide because of the lack of capital investment and because we need more oil, especially in the third world, because that's where you're going to get the cobalt, the nickel, the copper, all the items you're going to need to create, you know, the EV world, the solar world, the wind world. And that's going to require a lot of capital investment from to bring those lithium, et cetera, on, which is going to require a lot of fossil fuels. So while we may see increased use, lowering use of transportation fuels because of battery power for cars and trucks in the next decade or two in the OECD world, we're going to see more demand in the on the international side in the third world. So, for example, this year the forecasts are around 100 million barrels a day average in 2022, winter being the highest, spring and fall being the lowest, with an average of 100. There are quite a few forecasts out there that are saying by the end of the decade, demand is going to be between 104 and 107 million barrels a day. And right now we're not spending enough to replace the consumption of 100 million barrels. So the reserve life indices are shrinking. And we need incentive, not just the financial incentive, which is clearly there. You know, if you can bring on oil for, $30 or less and it's trading at, $77, that's a nice margin there. But you also need governments to be supportive. And we're not seeing that in the United States and Canada at the present time.
So does that mean it still is going to be a game where North America maybe lags behind on the production front broadly in these sort of, I guess, old school energy sources that we still need, but because the government isn't supportive, don't expect the U.S. or Canada to play catch up?
Well, I think in Canada, you've got to look at the commodities separately. So natural gas, the key issue is we're going to have LNG Canada come on and future projects. So there's going to be a good growth into the end of the decade of, 5 to 7 BCF a day. And we're producing about 16. So there's a build in that based on the LNG projects that are underway and that have support, financial support, and like LNG Canada have already gone through the approval process and are under construction. Remember, in the oil side, we have the TMX pipeline coming on at the end of next year, assuming it's not delayed again, really costing way more than anybody thought, but coming on, adding significant oil volumes on a takeaway basis. So there is a bit of growth for oil in 2024 and maybe 2025. But outside of that, we're going to need more takeaway capacity after that. So oil doesn't have as vibrant an upside potential versus natural gas, in my opinion.
Yeah, Joseph, there's also a lot more press and a lot more coverage of looking at converting coal plants to natural gas plants as another value driver for the nat gas sector. And it seems like most of the energy analysts we talk to are more constructive on nat gas than they are on oil. But when you look at the companies, when we drill down into the actual energy stocks, there are some companies that are oil heavy, some that are all nat gas, and some that are hybrids. Do you like the optionality of a hybrid type of company where they have both oil and nat gas to be able to play both markets kind of as an internal hedge?
Well, even, if you take, companies that are natural gas focused, if they're in the Montney, there's liquids rich. So you take Tourmaline and you've got a very decent, mix of liquids, also light oil. So you are getting the mix of that, which to me is what we've been looking for, is you want to see that. I'll just give you the mix for Tourmaline. They are 23% liquid, 77% natural gas. And, you go to Vermilion, it's, 54 and 46. You go to Birchcliff, it's 19 liquids, 81 in natural gas. So you do have a condensate, which, of course, is needed to move heavy oil. And so the condensate gets moved into, Fort Saskatchewan area, Fort Mac area, and then gets, and then is used as the diluent to move heavy, molasses, heavy crudes.
For everyone looking at the energy sector saying, I want exposure, but I want somewhat safe exposure. I know that can be hard to say. Do you recommend people just looking at the larger players because they do have that asset base that is a bit more established?
Well, I'm not as big a fan of the integrated. So, you look at, the Cenovus, Suncor's, Imperials. I think the margins that they've gotten on the refining side are about as good as they're going to get. And they really don't have as many growth options on the liquid side. I like the companies that are more the E&P players. And so, you know, on the oily side, you know, you've got, you know, Whitecap and Vermilion. On the natural gas side, you've got Tourmaline, ARC, Birchcliff, Pipestone, Crew. So there's lots of different ways to go at it. And what I would be looking at, it, you know, is, you know, first you want to look at the balance sheet. How strong is the balance sheet? And, you know, are there, is the debt to cash flow under 1 year? You know, a case like Tourmaline, it's a half year or less, and they'll probably be debt-free if they want. Birchcliff is talking about being debt-free at the end of this year. The second, I'd be looking at how much capital is needed to replace the decline rates and any growth where they've committed to facilities. And then I'd be looking at discretionary free funds flow and where this is the company looking to put it. Are they looking at doing special dividends on top of regular dividends, increasing the regular dividends, a normal course issuer bid, and then depending upon, you know, what you think is the need, you know, you want some shareholder return. But my focus is mainly towards a company that have a growth wedge between now and the, you know, the end of this decade. So the natural gas companies, most of them have growth wedges because they're waiting, you know, on the LNG business coming, and they know they're going to have to expand to get that. And then you guys like Tourmaline and ARC have found ways to get to the U.S. Gulf Coast to be part of the LNG export business of the U.S. But the Canadians, others, and smaller ones are waiting for the opportunity on the west coast of Canada. So I'm getting more and more bullish. I'm looking at adding more names. We're doing work on 3-4 names right now to potentially add new coverage of some great ideas to add to the list that we do cover of 33 companies. And, you know, we're going to have a webinar in February, you know, Thursday, February 23rd, for all of our subscribers to go over all the ideas we put on the action alert list between now and then, the additional names. And so I'm getting into the, you know, bullish to very bullish. And in, by the time we get to February, I expect to be in the very bullish camp again with prices potentially that we put on the list 10-20% lower than they are today.
Well, Joseph, it's an interesting year for sure in the oil and gas stocks in the sense that, to your point, their balance sheets are much better. A lot of companies have paid down a monstrous amount of debt compared to where they were a few years ago, where the industry was hanging on for survival. A lot of these companies are cashed up. They're generating big revenues. They've done a lot of shareholder returns, so the share buybacks, the dividends, the special dividends. But you brought up the growth wedge. I'd like to focus on that. Is there a percentage you look at with companies that they're putting into growth? Does it vary from oil to nat gas, what you're looking at in that sense? And how much of the free cash flows do you want to see companies putting into growing their organizations instead of just returning it all to shareholders?
Yeah, what I'm looking at is companies that I think oil, you know, if you see 10-20% growth potential, you know, 5% compounding per year, that would be about as good as you're going to get, because you really, the takeaway capacity is the issue. And, you know, the decline rates are high, you know, PDP reserve life RLIs require you to spend a lot of money to replace declines. And the RLIs historically are shorter in the oily companies versus natural gas companies. So a 5% kind of growth range for or better for oil names with a decent, you know, 1P and 2P RLI would be what you'd want to look at. For natural gas companies, you want to look at companies looking to grow, you know, 30 to 50% between now and the end of the decade to take advantage of the opportunity in the LNG export market, plus the normal growth that we see in North America. And to me, that's why I focus on the natural gas companies, because number one, they have extremely long RLIs, you know, 1P in the mid-teens, 2P in the 20-plus. And, you know, that compares to, let's say, 3 to 5 on 1P for oil and, you know, maybe 5 to 7 for 2P. So you can see that the RLI difference is there. So the amount of drilling you need to do to stand, you know, to stay still is lower for natural gas companies.
So then, Joseph, it sounds like, look, you are ready to get bullish here. And I have to say, throughout most of this last year, you were looking to the downside here for energy. When we look at individual companies and, more importantly, their dividends, it's something we've talked about all year about how stable are these dividends? Because now with higher rates, people are looking for higher dividend stocks. How do you go about analyzing if those dividends are stable and even if they could increase?
Well, you know, if you look at where price of oil was just a month or two ago versus we are now and compare it to Q1 when we were 130, a lot of companies are still plugging out, forecasts for 2023 with $80 and $85 WTI. I think that, you're going to want to see them show us, what happens with their cash flows if WTI is in the 70s, $70 WTI, because as I said, I expect we'll break 70 during Q1. So to me, I watch that how much of a payout ratio they have versus the required CapEx. And if I'm concerned that they need to use that money to pay down debt more, or that, the costs of drilling and equipping and fracking is higher, do they have enough in their budget to take that into account in terms of the cost structure? Then if their payout ratio is too high, then I would be concerned that they might have to lower their dividend. That's why I like it that a lot of companies are using the format of special dividends or variable dividends. And, Hemisphere is using the word variable. Tourmaline uses the word special dividends. And I think that's the best way to go, because if you've earned it and your balance sheet is good, then you can afford to increase the dividends. But to me, I still want to see that growth wedge.
Well, Joseph, just one other part of the energy sector that you'd mentioned briefly, but I'd love to dive into, and that's the oil services part of it. We've seen some big moves in the oil stocks earlier in the year. Some of those have rolled off. We've seen some choppy moves in the nat gas stocks. Some of them are up substantially, though. The oil services didn't respond as much. They kind of pulled back in the middle of the year, but then had a recent move higher. If I just look at OIH, the oil services ETF, it looks like it's bounced back the last quarter here. How are you looking at oil services setting up for next year?
Well, I like the oil services because the utilization rate goes up as they do more drilling, especially, for natural gas, so that the margins can go up and the price power goes up. And as your utilization rate goes up, that really, impacts the bottom line significantly. The leverage is fabulous. But the stocks have come down. If you look at, Trican and others, they've really come down from their highs. And I think that, if I'm right about this sub 70 during Q1, those stocks will come down a little bit more, because companies will be reluctant to be very aggressive in their drilling programs because they'll be worried about cash flows and, and having to cut dividends that they put in place. So they may be a little slower in terms of the activity level. And as companies, report that, and as the companies in the service sector say that, the demand increase that they thought would come in Q1 and Q2 versus, the prior year didn't come through, that will be where the stocks, have a little air in them, and they do come down. You know, if I'm looking at a 10-20% decline in the, for the majority of stocks, I think service sector names could come down even more than that because of the leverage to the upside and downside.
All right, Joseph, we'll wrap it up here. Pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this final weekend show of the year. I'm going to be looking forward to covering the energy sector next year. We've made a concerted effort to try to get a few more energy companies on the show because, quite frankly, we have heard a lot of positive and optimistic comments throughout next year and even long-term for this sector. And these companies, look, they're doing really well. They've cleaned up their balance sheets. They're paying some very nice dividends. Joseph, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a very happy new year. We'll chat again next year. Thanks again for all your time.
My pleasure. And that holiday special offer is still available. You'll see that in Ion Energy. So if anyone would like to take advantage of the subscription and get the discount and then be able to get those recommendations when we send them out, you'll see that in Ion Energy, which people can just get on our website.